Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The
Ice Age! You want to come and jaw with you?
I'm going to make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 94 of season 2 of LCP. Jeff D. Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani, Gooch coming at you on this Monday morning post-Easter with a ton of shit. A lot in the Star Wars universe, I might add. Star Wars Celebration, the not yearly, not even bi-yearly, like the just sometimes now convention that they do. It's been kind of off. It was pretty consistent once, especially once the Disney Star Wars started becoming a thing, but it hasn't been fully consistent for a while, but now it seems like things are ramping up. They're going to be off next year, but they were on this year in London. And there was an insane amount of Star Wars news, some trailers, so we'll get into that. Two reviews, Mario, the Mario Brothers movie, and Air, the Nike movie that just came out via Mr. Ben Affleck. Very interesting career Ben Affleck has as a director of cinema. So we'll talk about those, and some other small news items, as well, but it mostly starts off with Star Wars. And then of course we'll talk Succession. We got to talk about the new episode of Succession, which has really blown up social media. So it's one of those moments, you can recognize when a prestige TV show has like their moment, and this show has had that before. But I think the most recent episode of Succession definitely had maybe its like signature moment. Especially for this season. We had a pretty shocking time in the season, too. It caught everyone off guard. I'll get to that in a minute, though. But this episode brought to you by BetterHelp. This show brought to you by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because always growing and changing how you cope with maybe trauma, traumatic events, things that may be going on in your life. Everyone has a different way of doing it, but it's hard to figure that out if you're not talking to someone. And therapy is a great way to do that. Deepening your self-awareness, understanding of things that are going on. Sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do or how we should react or what's the best way to react to cope or just handle things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. And that's the big thing. I don't like going to therapy. Doing it online, great. You can do chats. You can do phone calls. You can do video calls. You don't have to see anybody if you don't want to. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/light. BetterHelp, HELP.com/light. Get 10% off your first month. Star Wars. Pretty cool weekend for Star Wars shit. Maybe 10 years too late to set up like continuity. I don't fucking care. That's awesome. I'm very pleased with what we've seen so far. Star Wars, a blanket reaction, Ken Jack, and I'll get into the more minutia of it. Star Wars Celebration.
I think most of this stuff, I don't think there's anything that got announced where I was like, this seems dumb or this seems like something that's going to go the way of Rogue Squadron or whatever. But everything I think pretty much I was excited for. I think the one thing where I looked at it and I was like, that's perfect, was the Lars Mikkelsen getting cast as the live action version of Thrawn as well. Yeah. Super cool. Is we now, I guess, the second time they've done this in this animated universe with Katie Sackhoff too. And Lars Mikkelsen, he just fits the role. He's just tall, menacing dude. He's got kind of like the same look as his little bro Mads, except like the creepiness factor's cranked up to 10. a little bit. And just I think he's just a perfect fit for Thrawn. And I want to see him in that creepy blue skin.
Never forget when he played fake Putin on House of Cards.
Fake Putin in House of Cards, and he also played like the anti Sherlock in Sherlock.
Where Moriarty?
He had like no. That would be too easy. That was played by the guy that the girl was horny for in Fleabag, whose name I forget.
The hot priest.
The hot priest. No, he played like this guy that like he stored the secrets of politicians and like basically stored like blackmail in his head. In Apple Bomb or Apple Core, I forget. I don't know. Weird episode. Good Man. Villain, though. Good villain.
Talk about writing. He stored blackmail in his head. The Star Wars stuff, yeah, no, it's exciting, but at the same time, Kinjak brought it up, Rogue Squadron, all those films they announced, like, I guess Taika's still happening. Like, Kathleen Kennedy is very guarded with what she says about that movie, but apparently it's still happening. It's hard to get excited for this stuff when they just put all that shit on the back burner.
Like, thank you.
If I had to pick one that I'm most excited for, it'd be the James Mangold origins of the. I love origin stories. The origin of the Jedi sounds amazing. Star Wars fans for years, especially the people who play the video games, Knights of the Old Republic, they've preached for a long time and they wanted for a long time that era of Star Wars. So I'm excited for that. Get away from what we know. The Dave Filoni thing seems a little strange. Wrapping up a bunch of series with a film.
Yeah.
It seems you're asking a lot from the audience, you know, to say, hey, you need to watch all these Disney Plus series to get this movie. So I'm interested to see what they do there.
Oh,
you don't think so? I think that's a little strange. Like, imagine if Marvel has done it in a way, but not really, because even then their series barely tie into the movies.
Yeah.
I don't think that's weird at all. I think it's a pretty massive pop culture impactful show, The Mandalorian. I don't think it's that like that.
Yeah, but it's supposed to wrap up the entire Mandoverse. So that's
I don't think that includes your Boba Fett. I would argue it's like an actual good step for once. Like they're thinking about literally just fans in this case. I think it's great.
Like the almost the opposite of with you have like a Deadpool or Entourage follow film. Like those shows, like their audience is so much smaller than it is for Mandalorian or the Mandoverse. It's crazy. So like when you have this many people watching, I think it just kind of makes sense I think this is
that's a majorly positive thing. Like I viewed it as the exact opposite. Excuse me. Like I think like my concern with Star Wars has been that they have been too much trying to play into worrying about like this mass audience. Like they literally retconned a fucking movie because they got weird for 5 seconds at The Last Jedi and everyone shit their pants. Like I think this is the exact right. You got the opposite of that.
I hope Oh, go ahead, Chris.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not that interested in Star Wars anymore, but with that said, I acknowledge
you're like, a Star Wars fan. What? I don't think you like Star Wars.
As he sits in front of an empire, it's a Star Wars empire. Oh, Darth Vader's right behind you.
We'll have to clip that because that's a good point. But no, look, what I mean by that is I don't have any faith that what they're going to put out cinematically is going to be that great. And even beyond that, it's hard for me. Like on paper, many of these ideas are very cool. James Mangold doing a biblical epic in the Star Wars universe. Like Mangold's on a fucking roll. My big issue is I have no faith anymore that any of these projects are going to happen. I will say with tremendous confidence that Taika movie is not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They announced it 3 years ago. There's no actors, no script, no story. He went and made Love and Thunder, but for there to be nothing 3 years in, which I wouldn't have a problem with, but there's a consistency with this in the Star Wars universe where project gets announced.
The point of this is that like they can these recent things to do this, to like finally have order. Like this is them finally kind of addressing that.
Do you think it's going to stick though? On paper, I like that. But you think that all these projects are going to happen still?
What would tell you that it wouldn't stick? They're actually addressing the problem we've all been complaining about. That's been kind of my thing. And I'm not pointing this directly at you, but like that was crazy to me. On the morning all this shit came out, people who I know for a fact complained about this not happening were like shitting on it. I'm like, this is what you've wanted now. Like they are now They're like not doing the fucking 10 different branches in a billion directions, random things that like they're connecting it. Like they're going to sit down and actually have two people run it, not just the head of the studio. Like they're going to do that now. Like that is, will it now, to your credit, you're definitely not wrong on this one. I'm not saying you're wrong in general, but like track record for movies is not great. Right. So like it being good, I totally get. But like in terms of like the plan, like they're just doing now kind of what everyone wanted. Like, so that ultra, at least they fucking acknowledge it. Again, way too late in the game to be doing that. Like they should have done it years ago, but whatever. Like we complained about it. So now I'm not going to sit here and get like, I don't know, like I great.
Yeah. Good. No, I have no issue with the plan. I have my concerns that plan's not going to come to fruition because this has happened multiple times with Star Wars now. Now, if they have finally done what apparently DC has done, where it's like, all right, threw a lot of shit at the wall. Now we have an actual concrete plan of what we're doing. If it works, dude, I'll be back on board completely. My issue with Star Wars has just been lately is I feel like the quality of the product just hasn't been that enticing. Even I like Mando quite a bit, but I don't think, and we'll see what happens these last few episodes, Mando this season has not captured the hearts and minds of people the way that seasons one and two did. I feel like
we'll
say there's definitely a split.
Yeah,
we've heard some people on the inside that this next one is apparently like the best episode of Mandalorian ever.
Okay, well then maybe they can find
just noting.
Yeah, no, I mean, both seasons one and two ended with a bang the last like three episodes. So I hope that happens. Look, I it's a weird thing I have with Star Wars. I want it to be great again and get all excited about these products. I've been let down many times. I hope that this is a turning point for them. There's a ton of talented people attached to these projects and I hope it works. I really do.
Yeah. I mean, it's been scattershot for a while. That's been the thing. It's like, oh, hey, Patty Jenkins is doing this. It's like, oh, now fucking
Patty Jenkins.
I don't know. Like Obi-Wan random. Like it felt weird. Like it's been kind of like just weird. Like it feels like a whole different company made Obi-Wan than who made Andor. Right.
Yeah.
Where say what you want about Marvel, like Marvel, the qualities, they've definitely hit a weird fucking spell right now. But like Marvel, you can tell Marvel made it. Where like it almost like it just, there's been this weird vibe and feeling with like Boba Fett, like had a couple nice moments, but then you're like, what the fuck is, like, how is this the same company? How is this the same vision?
I thought it was very funny how much they brought up an entire panel for Obi-Wan. Like, they did a full like 2 or 3 hour panel with like the cast of Obi-Wan, everything. I don't think they talked about Andor once this weekend. I didn't see anything. I didn't see them mention Andor one time.
I saw like 2 seconds of Tony Gilroy and that was it. Like, I really did not get the shine it deserved considering like everybody that did watch it pretty much was like, this is a really, really great show. Kind of crazy. I don't know.
Also, I found Kathleen Kennedy's comments about the Taika Waititi movie from this weekend. Very weird comments. She said he doesn't really want to bring others into that process, and I don't blame him. He has a very unique voice, so we want to protect that, and that's what he's doing. So it sounds like she doesn't know what he's doing either.
I
don't know. Like, fuck, if it takes him a while, whatever, I guess. I mean,
he's got live-action Akira movie coming out soon, too. I think he would finish that before finishing doing Star Wars, I would imagine, just because I would guess, right, just based where he is right now, after doing the Marvel movie that people were way more split on, I would be like, hey, let me take a quick break from big franchise and do something Akira, which is way more beloved, and throw my voice into that, and then do Star Wars.
He needs to get back to doing some intimate work.
Yeah, well, isn't his next movie that's already been completed, isn't it called Next Goal Wins? It's the soccer movie.
The Fassbender one.
It's supposed to be terrible.
Oh, really? Has it been pushed back a bunch? I feel like that was another one that, dude, if that's bad, he's going to get dropped from Star Wars. I'm telling you, it's happened a million times. Josh Trank was supposed to do Boba Fett, then Fantastic Four came out. Patty Jenkins was supposed to do Rogue Squadron, then Wonder Woman 84 came out. They do this test, this test period. Colin Trevorrow, Book of Henry.
Oh, yeah.
If this is bad, they're gonna drop him.
Maybe he has a much better track. Taika Waititi won a fucking Oscar. It's a little different. Josh Trank. Josh Trank was a nobody and
Jenkins is an established director. They dropped her.
She I think is different only because she's like the de facto, this is the best woman director in the world. never was the case at all. But like, she just gets that title from like, I don't know, pundits and shit.
By the way, Patty Jenkins, who looks like Carrie from Succession, by the way.
Yes.
Because she, yeah. I've been wondering who that
bangs.
Looks like.
It's the bangs.
The bangs, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Patty Jenkins.
Like, yeah, Patty Jenkins' career is very odd.
Very bizarre.
She directed Monster, then won Wonder Woman 15 years later.
She did nothing in between those.
No, she did like some TV. Like,
that is fucking bizarre.
Like a little bit of TV. Not like she did a couple Jenkins. Shows, like an episode here and there.
Patty Jenkins.
Patty Jenkins.
That's a horrible bit.
It's like, if you're going to do Leroy Jenkins, you can't do it at 10%, man. Come on.
It's early. Do you want me to do it 100%?
Now, let me be clear.
10% Larry.
Patty Jenkins.
See, that's where you go with it.
Very funny bit, but really stupid as well. Like, really, like, yeah. I appreciated
people
it.
People remember.
I really fucking hated it.
You remember World of Warcraft, right? One of the greatest South Park episode ever.
Let's talk about the good Star Wars.
Some of the more films set after. There's a film set after the sequel trilogy following Rey building the Jedi Order. How they convinced her to come back to Star Wars is crazy. That must have been money.
What was the last thing she was in?
it was fucking Chaos Walking or whatever. The thing with Tom Holland, which was bad.
She's the Mark Hamill of this series. I just don't think she's getting roles.
She had a movie premiere at South by Southwest that apparently was pretty good.
The suicide movie.
Outside of that, her work has not been there.
I'm excited for that. Like, I've always liked that character. Then there's the James Mangold one, films at 25,000 years in the past at the origins of the first Jedi that should be awesome. He's wanted to do a Star Wars movie for a long time. Hopefully Indiana Jones is really good.
I bet it's going to be really good. I don't know. I'd
be surprised if it sucked.
Yeah.
Daisy Ridley, her middle name is Jazz. I didn't know that. It's something I just found out now looking at her up on Wikipedia. Her name is Daisy Jazz Ridley.
See, Jazz Ridley would be an awesome actress.
Oh, my God. No, she's a good actress. I really like her. You need to be so cool to be called Jazz Ridley.
Yeah, like, it's fair.
Sounds like a 1960s point guard.
Yes, it does.
Or like, I was going to say baseball, but that Jazz would be too exotic for them to put in a name.
Whoa, we let Jackie Robinson in the league. We don't need no Jazz Ridley playing.
It's too exotic for them.
There is a Jazz.
There is the Jazz that play in Utah. It makes perfect sense.
No, there's also the baseball Jazz, too.
There is a Jazz. The Mangold thing makes complete sense, though. Like the movie, Indiana Jones must be good. I mean, it's Lucasfilm. They wouldn't commit another big movie if they didn't think Indiana Jones was good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's another thing. It's like but then again, like, you don't know the reaction because they gave Rian Johnson his because they thought everyone was going to love Last Jedi, and that didn't happen.
Hmm. We still haven't canceled that.
I still would like Rian Johnson to do something, though. Yes. I also think
that's another one that's not going to happen.
I also do think that one is also potentially tied more sort of the fact that he's so wrapped up in the Knives Out world now. Mm. And with his like first look and everything, where I do think that was years ago that he was given that. And now things are way different with like streaming movies and all that. Though I do wish he was not connected to Netflix. I wish, like,
the weird thing with Mangold is, like, I feel like Mangold is so good when he's like adapting things that are already there. Like, if you look at like his like filmography of everything that's like amazing, it's like, you know, 310 of Yuma, there was already a 310 of Yuma. Like, even Ford vs. Ferrari is based on a real story. Like, in Logan, based in a world that already exists, based on comic books. Like, all that stuff is like he's adapting stuff that is amazing and he does an incredible job at it. This is something that's going to require his project. I think, like, yeah, there is source material obviously to work off of, but like if you're gonna make this really good, you need to be able to have like a really creative mind, because like you're gonna be the first one to step foot in this really in live action and be able to like go in any direction you want, do stuff that no one's seen before, like establish lore that no one has seen in Star Wars canon really, and at least in live action before. So like I think you need a really creative mind. I think that Mangold, obviously he's a fucking amazing director, but like I don't know what it will require to be like, you know, first man on the moon in this scenario, because you want to be able to establish something where a thousand other people can come in and like just run in the same exact era of Star Wars. So I don't know. Either way, very excited because, again, getting away from this this very constricted time period within Star Wars that we've been stuck in, where it's like, hey, you're getting from start of the original trilogy or prequel trilogy to end of sequel trilogy. That's the only time period you're working in. So get outside of that is really cool.
It's going to open up to be like, hey, how are you? Mike Skywalker.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, exactly. I'm Jebediah Skywalker. Yeah. Nice God to meet you. I'm Noah Skywalker. Cain and Abel Skywalker. Like it's
Seth Skywalker.
Yeah, the third man, Seth. That's right. Adam and Eve Solo.
Darth Seth.
Darth Seth.
The third, people forget, third man will never exist in the Bible, Seth.
First
the most non-Bible name ever.
First trailer for Ahsoka.
Very good.
Your mic's a little low, Jeff.
I'm pretty far away from it. Ahsoka trailer, yeah, very good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, it's very awesome. Excited for this. There's also that trust level with Dave Filoni. Like, this is his, truly his baby. Like, Mandalorian might be his baby, but this is, like, his thing. And if you're, like, I can't suggest enough. You gotta see Clone Wars and Rebels if you have not. It's such a massive part of going into these series. It makes them so much better. I'm very excited for Ahsoka. Thrawn is my
blue bastard.
Get your little
my
toy.
Favorite fucking Star Wars character when I was growing up, because they had the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire trilogy, which was like the de facto Star Wars trilogy. It was books, probably the last books I ever read, like 20 years ago. Still haven't finished Dune. I'm pretty sure I know how it ends, at least the first half of it. But they were just like awesome ways to think that the Star Wars trilogy would end, or like continue, I guess. And so the Thrawn character has always been my favorite. So to see him in live action is like one of those really fucking crazy cool moments. Because he was always great in Star Wars Rebels and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. I hope this just goes like more than one season. I want a lot of Thrawn. I don't want him to get the Cad Bane treatment, but where he's just like, he got Cad Bane. I really hope that wasn't the end of him. That would be such a fucking tease. But I'm really hoping that he gets like, I guess a longer run in the Star Wars universe than just this. Cause Thrawn is just one of the coolest characters in the entire Star Wars universe, if not the singular best, at least as far as like a complete villain character. But yeah, the trailer looked cool. I'm excited really to see Sabine Wren, because she was one of my favorite characters in Rebels. I think she was like, honestly, before the Mandalorian came out, she was the best Mandalorian. Like she was really, really super cool. Her entire history of like the clan Wren and like them having like more of like a Japanese style to it, super cool. And like her entire story is insane. Like they're the ones that defeated the Empire first on Mandalore. Back before the Purge, I guess. So super cool story behind her. Seeing her in live action is going to be great. And all the other effects and everything looked like on Mando scale or on Mando like quality anyway. And I'm really pumped up for it. This is really cool. It was also nice seeing the little story from Rosario Dawson. She's like, yeah, someone put like Boss Logic drew me as Ahsoka, and it came to the attention of Dave Filoni, and he's like, all right, let's do it. So Boss Logic almost like getting her the role is kind of sick.
I hate that. I hate Boss Logic.
Boss Logic, Australian King.
Oh my gosh. No, Ahsoka's she's my favorite Star Wars character.
Wow.
Yeah, no, I love her. I think she's one of the most fully fleshed out characters in the Star Wars universe. And that goes back to, she is Dave Filoni's baby.
For sure.
He put a lot of work into just in season one, making her insufferable and building her up from there. And like, I mean, she was annoying, but she was written that way. And she develops into like easily one of the coolest. I mean, she doesn't even end up being a Jedi. Like she explores the ideas of what it is to leave the Jedi Order, and her relationship with Anakin. Like it's all just so well done. I can't wait for this series. And it's also interesting to note, Dave Filoni wrote every single episode of this series.
Yeah, that was good. I liked seeing that. That's been a problem. Mandalorian. They've done really well with keeping that consistent voice, even though episodes have had a different feel, which is great, obviously. Not that they've invented that, but that's good to see, because that is just, that's his thing.
It's so interesting, because I remember back when that Clone Wars movie came out, like Ahsoka was like Jar Jar Binks levels of hated for a short time. And so it's really an amazing turnaround what they've done with that character, that she's become so accepted into the Star Wars world.
That's the power of Filoni, man. Yeah, he's the one that built that entire from like the base. And she's I agree with you. She's one of the best Star Wars characters.
So cool. There's the dual lightsaber, the dual white lightsaber. So fucking cool looking. Like when she, in the trailer, when she like lands on the like roof of something, I don't know what it was, like a little temple or something. She like throws them out to the side and like does like the little circle and floats down. So sick.
And they did her justice too in Mando. Like her episode is like one of my favorite in Mando, where they have like the dual samurai and Western feel to it. And like her going around like killing all those dudes in the mid in like the dark, like all the bounty hunters. So good. Dude. Great intro.
Ray Stevenson having a orange lightsaber too. Very sick. Cool.
There's a lot of people very confused. They're like, oh, does the red look different? I'm like, that's not red.
It's just a different color, bro.
Other colors exist.
Yeah. His name is like Babylon or something too, right? I think they said.
Baylan's Skull.
Baylan's Skull?
S-K-O-L-L.
Oh, like the
skull.
The dip.
Yeah, like they're fucking Vikings. Okay. All right, cool. I'm in.
Skull.
Yeah. People forget Ray Stevenson loves the dimples on a woman's back from the other guys. Great character.
I always liked that
bodyguard. He's good. He's really good in Rome on HBO. Really good show.
He would have been a great Punisher if that movie wasn't dog shit.
Yeah. Yeah. You can say that about every Punisher movie, basically.
That's true, but him especially. He was built for it.
That's a good name, too, Frank Castle.
Yeah.
So I think that's it on Star Wars. Obviously, Lars Mikkelsen back in Star Wars, we mentioned before. We talked about this the other day, maybe? Didn't we talk about this?
No, we didn't
talk about it. Talk about Killers of the Flower Moon being 4 hours long for Martin Scorsese?
No, we didn't.
Sedgwick Merrick can, and then release in theaters this year.
4 hours. Do we need to have a discussion about Martin?
That's long. But I don't know.
Here's the thing.
I like Taika
Waititi makes a 4 hour movie. There's a problem. If Martin Scorsese wants to make a 4 hour movie, it's just like fucking who's going to tell him? No, not me.
Oh, it'll probably be good. But 4 hours in a fucking theater. We gotta have a discussion about intermissions. This is a movie where I think you got to have the intermission.
I would love an intermission.
Members of the Osage tribe in northeastern Oklahoma are murdered under mysterious circumstances in the 1920s, sparking a major FBI investigation directed by a 29-year-old J. Edgar Hoover and former Texas Ranger Tom White, described as an old-style lawman. Leo, Robert De Niro, Plemons, Lee Gladstone, Brendan Fraser, John Lithgow, which I don't know why that's the one that excites me the most.
John Lithgow? Hell yeah.
Love a good John Lithgow. Best
Churchill.
Best ever. Churchill, yeah.
It's so fun. I love that. Like, one of the most revered British figures in history, and, like, he's just played by an American better than anybody.
Well, it's about time, man. Batman is British. Spider-Man is British. I mean, I feel like it's time
Tom Wamsgams is British. It's so many of these iconic.
All not historical figures. Very fictional. But, like, if they had a British guy playing, like, Teddy Roosevelt or something, it'd be rough.
This is very random, but it's a John Lithgow adjacent question. Did Farquaad die in the first Shrek?
Yeah, right?
He gets eaten, right?
The dragon eats him.
If he gets swallowed by the dragon, you could theoretically bring him back. Because I'm thinking if they're going to go all out for Shrek 5, you got to bring
back. That's our next thing. We'll just talk about that next. Mm-hmm. Killing the Flower Moon, that comes out in May. I'm very excited for that. Shrek 5 apparently happening.
I like it. Puss in Boots going off. Why not?
I kind of do too, weirdly. You'd think I'd be against this, but I'm just so fascinated at how Shrek has endured as a like, it is still a big fucking deal. The last one was 2010, Shrek Forever After, which actually wasn't that bad. I remember seeing it.
None of them are like bad. That's the weird thing about Shrek. It's like none of them are awful.
One's kind of rough.
Shrek the Third.
What's wrong with Shrek the Third?
Shrek the Third.
Those are haters.
But the first two were great, and I thought the fourth one was fine. It's that like full circle Hollywood thing where all these actors, sans maybe Eddie Murphy, like their careers have kind of gone to shit. So like let's bring the gang back together. There's a nostalgic element I'm actually kind of excited for with this. But again, this is where me throwing around ideas. You got to bring Farquaad back. and you got to have Smash Mouth back to do at least one original song. You do that,
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
The new Puss in Boots we talked about the other day, it was so fucking solid and good that it like it makes sense for them to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shrek 5.
They're the cash cow for DreamWorks.
Yeah, I was going to say Shrek 5 will make $1 billion at the box office. Easy.
Yeah, easy.
It hits every age group. Like, because unlike a movie we're going to talk about later where the humor is very, very much targeted at a younger audience, Shrek, I can't think of a movie that toes the line better at appealing to older and younger audiences with its comedy. Like, it hits on both. And it sneaks it in there so well.
You watch the first Shrek today. There's more shit in there for adults than there is. I mean, the villain's character is named Lord Fuckwad. I mean, it's like it's they do a great job with that. Yeah, I still laugh at the first Shrek.
Number two, my lord. Number two.
Speaking of kind of this era of movie, Dana Carvey confirmed the Master of Disguise 9/11 story that they're in. They're in the Turtle Club. He said, "I'm dressed as the turtle man with the bald head." I thought this was like staunchly denied.
Well, it's
me too.
It was slightly wrong, wasn't it? Because wasn't the original story that it was on 9/11 when they were filming it, and he came out and said, "Okay, it wasn't actually 9/11. It was our first scene back after we took a break following September 11th, and that's when they did the moment of silence." And so, I mean, it's slightly off, but still there has to be a picture of this somewhere.
I mean, that picture would go for $1 million. That'd be Dana Carvey wearing his turtle suit.
I was shocked when the first plane hit the tower.
There'd be that second one, like footage somewhere.
Yeah,
they do, but they do so much behind the scenes, and I'm sure there definitely was behind the scenes just movies. That scene has to exist.
It'd be funny if that made like the blooper reel of the movie. Like the movie ends and it just rolls and it, like you're watching Rush Hour or something, and it's just Dana Carvey's bald cap being like, so I don't know. I mean there's I don't think that jet fuel can burn these steel beams, folks. There's something about it.
Really? It's funny because didn't that movie have to add a blooper reel at the end of it because it wasn't long enough to be considered a feature length film?
Did it really?
Yeah, I remember Roger Ebert going off about that, being like, I had to sit there for an extra 5 minutes as they play the blooper reel for me.
I don't remember there being a blooper reel. Then again, I can't imagine myself tuning in the first time I watched this to make sure that I've caught it.
Yeah, 80-minute runtime.
Movie was funny. Movie was funny as hell.
Yeah, I guess. I haven't seen it in 2 decades.
Dude would fart every time he laughed.
He was the villain.
It was Data from Star Trek was the guy who kept farting.
Yeah, Brent Spiner. Yeah. Devlin Bowman was the character's name. He farted every time he laughed.
What was the main character's name? Pistachio Disguise?
Pistachio Disguise.
You guys are so unfair to that movie. That movie
was
funny. We should
do a commentary track for that shit. I don't want to watch it.
James Brolin was in that movie as Fabrizio Disguise. Terrible.
It won worst movie of the 2002 Stinkers Bad Movie Awards. I've never heard of the Stinker Bad Movie Awards, but I kind of want to revive it, assuming it's dead.
It's like the Golden Globes to the Razzies.
Yeah.
That's James a really, really bad movie, by the way.
I want to see it.
Like, not like, I just don't, like, if you haven't, I watched for some stupid reason not long ago, I think during the pandemic. And I was like, it's beyond. If you've never seen it, Master Disguise is beyond what you could possibly imagine. It's so wretched. It's terrible. I wanna
see it. The second one's pretty good, where he infiltrates the Taliban.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the joke was going to be, because I'm like, they didn't make a fucking sale.
And a 1% on Rotten. Unbelievable.
1%. That's actually pretty hard to get.
Dude, the person who directed it doesn't even have a wiki page. It's crazy.
That's tough. Like,
that's how you gotta be bad for that in the movie world. Fabrizio Disguise.
Next up. I think that's it. I think we go into our reviews now. Oh, no, go Succession. Next up, Succession. Big spoiler alert for this show. Probably the biggest spoiler note ever in the history of the show.
Yeah.
I actually watched it late. Wasn't able to watch it on time. And I got texts and DMs about it. I was like, you gotta leave me alone. Don't fucking, like, I can just tell something happened. People were very mad. Not mad, very like blown away. They're like, what's your reaction? What's your reaction? I was like, I don't know. I gotta fucking wait. So I knew something crazy was gonna happen. Again, spoiler alert, but it is the death of Logan Roy, which we talked about. That someone had to die. Like, someone needed to be killed off on the show. It was inevitable. It wasn't like getting to a point where you're like this is now not working. You're just like, it's gonna happen. Like, it's almost happened many times before. So they do kill him off screen, which I think is great, because it gives you this sense for an hour and 2 minutes that he like could kind of not be dead.
Like, right. I thought they were gonna pull a fake out on us. I really did.
The whole time you're like. Because the way the family reacts, it was a master stroke by those behind Succession. I just thought it was so fucking good. And it really, it takes what I was already excited for. Like, I thought the storyline of the season was great to begin with, but now it really ramps it up. Because now it throws in a whole new wrench and wrinkle that we haven't dealt with this show yet, of this just mad dash for the top. Crazy, just a really incredibly active. By it's going to sweep every fucking award, by the way.
Yeah,
every TV award, like dunzo. Like, you may as well just like lay down the sword and move to next year if you want something, because Succession is going to take everything. But yeah, unbelievable episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. There's one of those things where with this season, you can't kind of stick to the same formula that the last few have been on, and I think that this is kind of a cool way to like. I don't know, do something different, right? You know what I mean? Like, do get something that breaks the mold for this final season in the last few, or not really like last few episodes, but like the last few episodes of the show. Just do something that's really going to throw a wrench in what you expect the formula to be. And I like that a lot, because that's something that I think if I was going to have any big complaint about this show over the last four seasons, it would just be like, it's the same sort of rigmarole over and over again. And this is obviously going to make this that whole dynamic change a lot. So very excited to see now with the next episode, more of the fallout.
Yeah. The balls it took to do this.
Yeah.
Balls it took. I mean, like, cause this was what it was, the way it looked was like, oh, this will be your prototypical Succession episode. Everybody's going to be joined together for Connor's wedding. They're all going to be at this event. Probably going to say some shit to each other. Some business stuff's going to go haywire. They're going to say some stupid stuff. It could be just boilerplate Succession, which is great. But what we got was unbelievable. I mean, not only to kill off Logan this early in the season, but to kill him off the way they did off screen. And then it just be 40 minutes of what felt like a real person dying.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it feels like. You kind of see them going through stages of grief, denial, like they don't know how to handle it. And it was phenomenal. I mean, the acting was incredible. I'm interested to see where they go from here. I don't know. This is awesome.
95% of movies and shows wouldn't have the stones to do it.
No. And like you said, Jeff, this is one of those episodes that will be remembered in pop culture. This is their red wedding. This is their, you know, this is their big episode. I mean, this is something special. As good as that season two finale was, this is the episode that I think people will talk about the most once this series is done.
What it reminded me of was the Ozymandias episode in Breaking Bad, where there kind of became this idea of, you know, nobody's safe right now from, you know, what these writers are cooking up. And I think that's a very important thing that you guys brought up, is the reactions by the family were so incredibly natural. To like just the way it was written. Now, I'd be willing to venture, not to get too more, but I'd be willing to venture whoever wrote this has experienced something similar in real life. Just the way that every member of the family was reacting, some angry, you know, some in denial. I thought it was very true to life. Yeah, I mean, like you say, it's a fantastically written episode. It's an entertaining episode. It's a sad episode, I guess. And the whole killing him off screen thing, I think there will be some controversy to that. It actually added to the suspense for me, because there's a part of me that's like, Logan is such a bastard. I could see him faking his own death just to do it. So the fact there was a moment in the episode where I'm like, are we sure? Even up until the very end. But it was kind of that final shot with Jeremy Strong where I'm like, all right, yeah, they're hammering this home. So yeah, I mean, an acting masterclass right by everybody. Good stuff. This is there's a reason this show is become what it's become. And this one was among its best.
Who was there? Okay, they nominate this episode obviously for Emmys. Who is the best performance in this episode? You think there's a lot of really? I mean, everyone is probably the best they've ever been.
Yeah,
but I think Matthew McFadden again is Tom.
Yeah, I think it's still Matthew McFadden. I think he is in this role. He's on another level, which is insane to say, but he stands out in that crowd, which is crazy to think. But he is fantastic as Tom. I mean, every mannerism, everything he does, it's so perfect.
I don't know. It's a tough question.
I thought Jeremy Strong was brilliant in this. I thought there was just a subtlety to his performance here, and he always has his guard up, it seems, as a character.
I'd have him if I were to pick one, it'd be a tough race between those two. But Jeremy Strong is so good at, like, I think, especially in this series, like facial acting.
Yes.
Like, he's really good at, like, making you feel a lot without having to say a word, which is something I always respect just from an acting perspective.
Yeah. Him coming to the realization that he can't buy his way out of this, like, situation. Like when he's on the phone with Frank and he's like, the best doctor.
Yeah.
Tell the pilots to fly faster. And like Frank just being like, listen, son, like he's gone. Nothing you can do. Like,
Frank and Carl were great too, as always though.
Yeah. Mm.
Carl's an all time character. Carl is so fucking funny. Funny.
When Carrie comes back from the cockpit and she's like, she's in shock and she's like, you know, laughing and chuckling. And he's like, well, based on that reaction, you think she would have caught a foul ball at the Yankees game? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of humor in this episode, but that got me.
Yeah, that was, it was definitely a landmark episode for the show, which is just, again, it's setting up. It's also setting up, by the way, if you watch the preview for the rest of the season, Alexander Skarsgård, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's 100 of them. That's the problem.
Yes.
Well, Bill is the clown. Stalin is Thor's friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, Alexander Skarsgård is clearly going to be a massive villainous character the rest of the season, which is cool because that character sucks. Like that character in like the Succession awesome way sucks. Like just a real piece of shit.
He's good at playing those roles, man.
Yeah.
He isn't fuck. What was the show they did? Big Little Lies. He's such a bastard.
Mm.
Oh yeah.
Perry.
Yeah, the election stuff. Yeah, I'm excited to see how much of a footprint Connor. It seems like Connor makes a little bit of a move.
He's my big winner. If we're gonna do winners and losers.
Winners and losers.
I think Connor has to be number one winner. He handled the death better than any of them. I think in a way it's because his relationship just was never there with Logan. Like he's like his first reaction was like, well, they didn't like me. Like
yeah, the second he obviously picked out the one piece of info that mattered most. He's like, he's on his way to Stockholm.
It's like, yeah, all right, and like he gets his wedding. Willow could have easily, you know, crushed him then and there. And instead they have their wedding and they're kind of away from all the drama and the chaos of what the Roy family is. And it felt like Connor had his happy moment.
Winner for me, probably Connor. I would actually oddly say Jerry a winner as well. Because Jerry benefited greatly from that death.
Jerry Black Magic.
That's the second time he's tried to fire somebody and then he gets severely injured, hurt, or dies. He did that to Frank in the first episode of the series. He fires him, but it never really becomes fully official because like he had his stroke or whatever he had in that first episode. They'd probably be the main ones. Tom definitely a winner currently, potentially. You've seen the preview. They mentioned the only person that really wrote hard for Tom was Logan. He's still in that position of power. And then, I mean, losers is just kind of all the fuck. The Willis seems like a big loser in all this still.
Well, Logan is probably number one.
He's the
guy who died, arguably.
De facto sweet death. Oh, Carrie probably a loser, dude. Carrie has lost.
Yeah, no, she's done.
Her variety hour is donezo.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie is like that, like the best player on the LeBron Cavs team after LeBron left, where you're like, you know, though, could be good without him, and just terrible. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, well, he stinks. Like, not good. I'd put Carrie up there as well.
Is she the Anderson Varejao of the Succession universe?
Hey, let's not shit on it. Varejao was never the problem. He was
not him. I love JJ.
Blue guy.
Be like Jamario Moon or something. It wouldn't be Varejao.
Anthony Parker's gonna really thrive without LeBron.
Anthony Hickson. JJ Hickson. JJ
Antoine Jameson about to have the year of his life.
Anthony Parker, Candace Parker's brother, he had a really funny nickname among Cavs fans who didn't like him. It was Weak Sauce. That's just stinks. Like, that's not like like that.
Oh, that's like that.
You
brutal.
Stink. Like, you just, oh. there's no way to interpret Weak that sauce. Other than you stink. Yeah. I had one more loser. Why am I forgetting this one scene that happened at the end?
For a loser?
Yeah. Fucking Colin, his security guy.
Oh yeah,
purposeless human being now. Which was a great moment in that episode. He just kind of stood there on the tarmac like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
He was my best pal.
My pal.
You're my pal.
Number one best pal.
You're my best pal.
Looking back at that conversation, we probably should have seen the clues were there. They did set that up nicely because Logan was like in that diner. I mean, as funny as it was, he was sitting there talking about like what happens when he dies. Like that was pretty. It was pretty foreshadowed. Well,
prophetic. I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, Colin, no one's going to believe him too. Now he'll be like, Colin, what are you doing here? Like, he told me I was best pal. What? When?
Mm-hmm.
Logan didn't say that.
How many shares does best pal get?
We were at a diner. You went to a fucking Logan doesn't go to diners.
What are you talking about, dude? Get the, you fucking weirdo. Get out of here. So that was Succession. Really great episode. It's going to be it looks like a rock fight to the end.
Do you think one child steps up above the rest? Or do you think this is a joint?
I think there's joint losers here. Like I think I don't know. Like I feel like it's going to be a bit of a surprise.
Because I feel like Kendall and Schiff stepped up in their own ways this episode, whereas Broman surprisingly did not.
Broman definitely cannot handle it.
He was surprisingly rattled.
Roman, the biggest loser of the family, probably in terms of the kids, because he clearly he had his moment where he like stood up to Dad finally, but Dad died and never heard it. It's just like that wasn't really there. And you can tell he's really upset that Jerry hates him now.
Oh, dude, he was looking for a hug so bad.
I'm he pretty sad. She's like, okay, here's the room. See ya.
Oh.
Man, the whole time while watching the show, I can't believe that, and maybe they did, I just forgot it. No one suggested Kieran Culkin as the Joker. He looks like the fucking, he sounds like the Joker to me. Maybe it'd be too distracting because it would just be Roman Quinn or Roman as, not Roman Quinn, but it'd just be Roman as the Joker, but like
that feels like the worst fucking BuzzFeed, but like in a funny way, like an old like BuzzFeed article from like 2007, like why Roman Roy was actually the Joker. Like on it after, like it's a story after you read like how Rugrats was really a dream in Angelica's mind and everyone was dead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like the next article is why Roman was really the Joker's origin story. Exactly, sounds exactly like spot on. What do they do that with? Life, the movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, where they said it was like a symbiote movie and it's like the prequel to Venom.
Something like that. They retroactively went back and were like, yeah, that's the creature that lands on Earth was actually the symbiote.
Yeah, here you go. From comicbook.com, the biggest evidence that life really is a Venom prequel. Stop, though.
That movie had a weirdly stacked cast, Life. That was
weird. I heard it was pretty good, yeah.
Ryan Reynolds, Jake Gyllenhaal. A couple others that were like
pretty Rebecca Ferguson, I think.
Rebecca Ferguson, yeah. Jesus. And she was like probably the fifth build character there.
Vulture.com. Here's the headline. The ending of Life reveals it's not a Venom prequel. You know what revealed that wasn't a Venom prequel? The fact that it wasn't a Venom prequel.
Not a Venom.
The fact that the movie was called Life and I had no connection to
it. Had no connection.
Something about spaceship or space station movies, they just feel like they got to make some weird edits to it, like fucking Cloverfield Paradox coming out after the Eagles beat the Patriots. They're just like, yeah, actually, by the way, this is a Cloverfield movie and you're going to have to watch it tonight.
That's how we hired
Gooch. Oh, by the way, guess what? It sucks.
Gooch wrote a dissertation on why Cloverfield Paradox is one of the best movies released in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's very good. It's very, very.
I haven't seen it.
You never saw
number
it?
Number one.
No.
Number one Daniel Brühl fan.
No movie in the history of cinema has ever had more hype die off quicker than that, because they announced it on the day of, and then it just stunk like hours later. Like it just
both of those great cast.
I legitimately think that's what happened. I think I was like, I don't feel like watching it tonight. I'm a little drunk. I'll watch it tomorrow. By the time I woke up, everyone was like, "Oh, it stinks." I was just like,
"Yeah." That's the thing. Nope. It's like there was no gray area to be like, "Oh, let's check it out." Like, no, everyone was like, "No, this sucks ass."
Yeah,
people both the recent Cloverfield movies should not have been Cloverfield movies. Just let it be anything else, and you're fine. All right, let's talk about Aura. Have you ever searched your name on a search engine? If not, you might be surprised by the amount of personal information that's available online. Your full legal name, email, home address, phone numbers, and more can be easily found. And it's not just true for you, but also for your friends and family. We're thrilled to partner with Aura. Aura is an all-in-one online safety solution that helps protect you and your family from identity theft, financial fraud, and online threats before they happen. With Aura, you can rest easy knowing that someone is looking out for you. The app scans the dark web and just tries to find your email addresses, passwords, social security numbers, and other sensitive information. If anything is found, you'll receive an alert in real time. If you're a victim of an ID theft, their experienced white glove fraud resolution team will help you navigate credit bureaus and help initiate credit freezes or locks and work with you around the clock to resolve it. They offer a suite of tools to protect you and your loved ones, including the real-time alerts of suspicious credit activity, computer virus protection, parental controls, a VPN, and a password manager. It's a comprehensive online safety solution that provides almost every tool you'll ever need in one place. Aura also helps reduce annoying robocalls, telemarketers, and junk mail by sending takedown requests on your behalf regularly. For a limited time, Aura is offering our listeners a 14-day trial plus a check of your data just to see if your personal information has been leaked online, all for free when you visit aura.com/LCB. That's aura.com/LCB. Certain terms apply, so make sure to check the site for details.
So that's that. Let's talk Super Mario Brothers. Let's talk Air for longer, because this is a kids movie. I think diving into it too deep is a little odd. We've reviewed kids movies on this show before. Don't get me wrong. Done plenty. But this is a true through and through, in my opinion, movie for children, which is not a bad thing. Super Mario Brothers movie, great cast of characters, whether you think they should be playing certain roles or not is one thing. But Chris Pratt, Anya Taylor-Joy, Charlie Day, Jack Black, Keegan-Michael Key, Seth Rogen, Fred Armisen, who I did not realize was playing one of the Kongs until afterwards. I was like, who the fuck is that voice? Fred Armisen. So debuted to 56% of Rotten Tomatoes critics, which we will talk about. We'll probably talk more about that if we'll talk about anything else. We talked about it on the episode on Friday too, but now we've seen it. It's a whole different context. Audiences love it. With the help from Princess Peach, Mario gets ready to square off against the all-powerful Bowser to stop his plans from conquering the world. It is a very short movie. I don't believe it's an hour and a half long. If you told me it was 60 minutes long, I would believe you.
Yeah.
It felt shorter than last night's episode of Succession, which was just a regular hour. Like it is a quick, short, no meat on the bones movie. It just does what it needs to do and moves on and gets through it. Like there's really, that movie does not pause for anything. And there's a reason for that. It's a movie for kids. It's a fucking kids movie, which is fine. I don't necessarily think it's a, I will say this. I'm not going to like excuse giving it a review. I don't think it's a great kids movie. Like I think there's better movies that are geared significantly more for kids than adults that are better than this. But in it's not a movie like a Pixar movie or, in like something we talk about Puss in Boots. Like it's not one of those animated movies that feels more like, wow, this, you could really make this feel like be adulty. Like this is an adulty movie for kids. Like this has some nice little moments and nods for adults, but it is geared 99% to kids. And that's why some of the reviews are just crazy to me. like there's a review, a frantic Easter egg hunt of a film that does bare minimum to please its loyal existing fan base. That's not what the movie was intended to be.
No. What do you mean fucking like, Easter egg hunt? It's not like you have to look hard for the references. Yeah, they're right there.
This whole package is a deranged mishmash of overstimulating elements. Yes, it's for kids.
No, like, no. The review from last week was my favorite. The one where the girl's like, this is disturbingly rote. That was my favorite one.
Dispiritingly
like,
rote.
Dispiritingly rote. Like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro?
Art House Film Wire. Jeff Mitchell. The Super Mario Brothers movie is a super nostalgic, but not super fun. Granted, I haven't regularly played home video games since NBA Jam circa 1995. No one, I know it's a circa cool. year is not a fun a person.
Cunt.
Home video games. God. Not those arcade ones that I grew up on.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm not going to defend it and say this is like a great movie, but it's one of those times where it's really weird. It's like, do you know what you're watching?
Yeah.
You can have an elevated movie for kids, but this is clearly supposed to be popcorn fare, fun, colorful, have a great time at the movies for kids, which is fucking fine, man. That's okay. Yeah. That can exist. I don't think it's particularly great. I think it's below average. But it looks cool. It's a fun movie. It's like right up there with like the Minions Rise of Gru for me. Like it's like right there. It's fine. 69 out of 100. That's what I'll give it. I think it's fun. It's a kids movie. It's very hard to review and rate a kids movie and not be like, hey, this movie's like, if I was rating this stuff as the demo is like adults, it'd be like a fucking 30, a 20. But it's not. It's a kids movie. That's it. It's like, what more do you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm at a 75 on it. I think it's the biggest takeaway is like that same thing where it's like, this was very clearly right from the start, like they were not really planning to make this. I don't think even beyond not being an adult themed or adult like received movie, I don't even think it was supposed to be really even an Easter egg hunt. I feel like they didn't include a ton of stuff that was supposed to be like insider references or anything like that. Not to say that I'm the world's number one like Mario historian or anything, but like I was watching and I was just like the entire time I'm like, this feels like it could be the plot to any children's movie and they just repackaged Mario around it. If that makes sense, like they skinned it with Mario. And I think it was totally fine. Like it was, it's for a kid. I'm sure this would be awesome where it's just like, it's sort of like ADD, the movie of colors and sounds and quick fire jokes and action and stuff like that. And that is perfect for a kid. It's perfect if you're a family, if you have a family and you have like little kids you want to bring to a movie, this is the perfect movie for that. And I'm sure they'll say it was the best movie ever for the next 10 years. But outside of that, it definitely didn't like push the envelope on anything. Like it wasn't trying to do some crazy plot shit. It was very familiar, very just kind of like regular, animation looked great. Colors were cool. Voice acting was good. I think it could have been more racist to Italians. That was probably my biggest takeaway is like,
the stereotypes. They pulled a lot of punches.
Yeah. They pulled a lot of punches. They were like, oh, we don't want to offend anybody. Like, dude, you can offend them. They deserve it. Could have been way, way better in that sense. I think it's weird. I agree with you. There's not just like a ton to say about it other than like, yeah, solid kids movie. That's it. It's like we're trying to review an episode of like Cocomelon or something, like, you know, as an adult, you know, it's like, what the fuck you want me to say? It's like, this is for the intended audience. It's perfect. If you want to go see this with your friends, don't. If you want to go see this with a date, don't. If you want to see this even with your parents, if you're roughly around her age, don't. If you have kids, go see it while it's in theaters. They'll have a blast. It'll be the coolest time of their life. But other than that, not really anything special. Nothing that's gonna like it's not gonna be, if you're looking for something that's also part of like the Break the Video Game Curse universe, sort of like how Last of Us is.
Yeah,
this isn't that either. Yeah. It's nowhere near that, but it is above all else, and I think this is the design, it's a good time. It is a good time, especially if you have the mind of a 9-year-old. I'm sure it's the greatest thing you've ever seen.
Okay, that explains why I'm a little higher than you guys. I think this is a good to great kids movie. Like in terms of kids, like this will be, if you bring your 7-year-old, this will be their favorite movie for the next year or two. Like they're gonna love it. It's fast, which I really appreciate. It does not. One of my biggest complaints about Puss in Boots, which I know people loved, was it did drag a little bit, especially for a kids movie. They kind of went off on some tangents where I was like, kind of need to pick up the pace a little bit. And this didn't stop to breathe at any moment, which I loved. all the characters got their shine. Like Mario gets his shine. Luigi, Princess Peach is a badass without them overdoing it. Bowser's cool. Like, I think it was great. I loved it. The music was good. Colors awesome. I had a lot of fun. And I saw some people being like, oh, kids. Someone replied to me like, oh, do kids even play Mario anymore? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Mario is still the most popular video game character in the world. It's not going to change anytime soon. Mario is a staple. It's a pillar of society. Yeah, it was awesome. Mario is very recognizable. They didn't do any deep cuts, which I appreciate. That's why I don't really get the Easter egg hunt thing. Like, yeah, this is very basic Mario lore.
What was the deepest cut you think that there might have been? I think it was probably the Punch-Out Cafe, the Mike Tyson's Punch-Out Cafe. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah.
There was one, I think, in like New York City. Like, there was like a Punch-Out. That was like a little Nintendo. Sorry. So there could have been more. But I think in terms of, like, you're right. I agree with you. Like, they're like, oh, chock full of Easter eggs. Like, what? Bowser was in the movie? He's one of the main characters?
Yeah. Donkey Kong? Who's this?
they were on carts in this movie.
Did you see that Easter
egg? That was cool, by the way. I like that.
Yeah, Mario was in it. Yeah, the carts. Yeah, that was, yeah.
Carts was sick. Awesome.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed they didn't do an Akira reference, though. I kept waiting for it with Princess Peach's motorcycle. I thought they were going to do it, and then they didn't do it.
We don't drive on rainbows in the real world. By the way, four of the top 10 highest selling Nintendo Switch games are Mario games.
Yeah.
Just to throw that out there.
It's fucking Mario or Mario, as one of our hosts likes to say, just to be annoying.
Mario.
I just said Mario like 20 times, brother. I changed for you assholes. I still would be saying Mario if it wasn't for you.
I want you to go back to Mario.
Damn, I just went through the top 22. It's even more. It's like 10 of the top 20. Or
were you guys Mario Paper games. Mario guys?
Oh, yeah.
Nah.
No, it wasn't Paper.
I never got into it.
I liked Luigi's Haunted Mansion too a lot, too. Mm-hmm.
I did play Luigi's Haunted Mansion, just walking around with that fucking vacuum cleaner.
Such a...
It literally, yes. One of my favorite moments, though, is when I forget what game it was. It might have been one of the Smash Bros. Or something. But Luigi getting killed in one of the animations. Grim Reaper just comes by and just rips out his soul. It was just the funniest thing I think I've ever seen. It was so good.
Oh, my gosh. I know exactly what you're talking about, too.
Yeah. I don't even remember when that was from. Damn, it was so funny, though.
Dude, the Bowser song. Jack Black singing that Peaches song. That was funny.
Yeah.
First of all, this is the first time I've ever heard somebody say that a movie could have used more racism. I thought that was very funny.
It needed more. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But bizarrely, this movie, okay, hear me out here. This movie kept reminding me of 80 for Brady. And what I mean by that is while watching it, my face was entirely expressionless, but there was never a moment where I hated it. And there was never a moment when I loved it. And for its target audience, I think it's perfect. So in that way, I'm a bit surprised by the reactions. There's a few moments of maybe chuckle. Very colorful. Yeah, I mean, look, we gave him shit, but like the voice works fine. Like Chris Pratt's fine. Everyone in this is doing a good job. There is one thing about it, though. And I think it's something that a lot of people use as a complaint that I not only appreciated but loved about this movie. It is a kid's movie that's actually a fucking kid's movie. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week when you brought up, Soul, Gooch, and some of the Pixar stuff. But even beyond that, it's like Zootopia, which I'm sure is a wonderful movie. But it's like back when I was a child, and maybe I was a dumb kid, but like I get upset when these movies that are supposed to be aimed at 7-year-olds have messages about like, police brutality and shit. Like, I just think we've kind of gone a little bit too far in the politicizing of certain things. There's nothing wrong with popcorn, cotton candy, children's fluff entertainment, and that's what this is like. You brought it up, Robbie, like this thing would have done numbers like for me as a kid watching it. Like, it's very pure. It's innocent. It's aimed directly at children, and that's okay. It's wholly inoffensive. Like, it's not and there's a way to do children's entertainment that can be obnoxious. Like those fucking Alvin and the Chipmunks movies are like the most offensive things because it's just loaded with pop culture references and they're obnoxious. This, I didn't find anything about it that was obnoxious. I didn't find anything about it that was great, but it's cute. It's perfectly acceptable, and I guarantee you we're going to get at least two more sequels to it.
Yeah, this movie's going to be, it has a very good shot at being the highest grossing movie of the year.
I had a feeling.
Absolutely.
It did 300 plus over the weekend, which is fucking crazy. Insane.
So I got it at a 70. It's fine.
What did I say? I think I saw somebody from the cast. I forget who. It might have been Charlie. No, it was Jack Black. Jack Black was saying that he wants Pedro Pascal to play Wario. And it's just like, yeah, shoot your shot. I respect that. Like, yeah, the movie's doing like historic numbers. Just say the name, make it happen.
Play who?
Leave him alone.
Leave him alone. That's one of my favorite OG viral videos. Leave Britney alone.
Just leave Pedro Pascal alone for like 5 minutes. Like, let him just like, let him breathe, right?
He's daddy.
I didn't think we were going to see Pedro. I thought we were going to see Wario and Waluigi at some point, but they just didn't have time to.
I'm from AOL Blast. The internet wants to know how big your cock is.
This is AOL Blast.
Yeah, I don't think there's much more to say on it. Like, it's a nice kids movie. I think even for kids, I think there could have been a hair more meat on the bone. But I do think it pretty fun. It's fine. The animation's very good. I like the animation quite a bit. It looks really nice. There's just a pop of movies are so drab and dreary to begin with these days anyway. So it's like nice to see a movie, just like a real nice pop of color. That's not a discredit on Avatar, which looked very nice on the screen too. I don't want Gooch to lash out at us as a Sully head.
Sully, stick together. That's what we do.
The only real complaint about that movie, looking back on it, was the selfie they took.
Oh, yeah. What? I forgot about that.
I mean, they took a selfie. It's a family picture. You don't take family pictures?
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
So that's that. Air now. Much different movie. Definitely not for children. It's about Nike pursuing Michael Jordan, creating a partnership that revolutionizes the world of sports, contemporary culture as they make the Air Jordan shoe. A lot of names in this: Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Jason Bateman, Marlon Wayans, Chris Tucker, Viola Davis. List goes on and on. Directed by Ben Affleck, who has just such an odd directing career.
Pretty damn good one, though.
He makes – I'm going to make a comment about
type of movies. Live by Night.
It's going to sound like I'm giving him way too much credit, and then I'm going to explain what I mean, because I don't think he deserves as much credit as maybe I potentially giving him here. But, yeah, he's had some really successful movies. The one that he wanted to make the most was probably his worst.
Definitely his worst.
That happened. I feel like that happens a lot.
Yeah, like Gone Baby Gone, awesome. The Town, awesome.
Fucking
Argo,
awesome.
I love Argo still.
Yep.
And then he did Live by Night, which was 7 years ago. What a boring poster for that movie. He's just sitting in a chair holding the gun in his white suit.
Yeah, it's like him like this with like wearing like a New Orleans like white suit or whatever. Just Ben.
Man, Live by Night. I almost rewatched it before watching Air. I was like, nah, never mind. Seemed worth my time. The new movie Air, he makes movies that all feel, I don't want to say that, I almost feel like you can recognize a Ben Affleck movie now. Like, there's just this, I don't want to say safe. And I fucking love this movie. And Affleck and Damon, especially Damon, like they just, when they get in the zone, like there's a zone, but this just feels very much like, I don't like it's got the same feel as Argo to me. Maybe with a little less of that like dramatic push that made Argo, I think, kind of pop just a hair more. I do love Argo, but I really, really liked this movie. I gave it a 92 out of 100. I really liked Air.
Wow.
Very, very big fan of Air. This is a very up my alley movie, type movie that I love. But I liked Air quite a bit. I think again, I'm a Damon guy. I like Affleck, so I think a lot of that lines up and makes sense. Where you could maybe even say I have like a bit of bias, but that's where I'd land on Air. We'll get more into it in a second, obviously. Ken Jack.
Yeah, I think a lot of the early reviews for this hit the nail on the head as far as like, look, this is going to be like the dad movie of the century. Like every early review, like that was the big takeaway, and I think that's pretty much where I landed on it as well. And a lot of people saying that it took the throne from or took the belt from Ford v Ferrari. I also agree with that. Although I think that this movie is like probably the best movie I've ever seen that is remarkably unspecial. Like it is like. Fair. The least special movie that I've enjoyed a lot. Like nothing about this movie at all was like had me thinking like, damn, that's really cool, or like that was a really interesting way of doing this, or this is a really cool part of a story I might not have thought of before. Like everything, like you were saying with the things being safe, Jeff, super super safe, very unspecial, but like inarguably very watchable. I think that the biggest takeaway is just that it's just like I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, but am unimpressed by it. Very unimpressed by it. I don't know how else to explain. And I'm trying to be complimentary, but it just sounds mean. But that's just the way I feel about it.
I think we're going to be in agreement. I get completely what you're saying. Yeah.
I think the story was cool. A lot of this I didn't really know because, like, and I purposely, even when they announced this movie, I was like, I don't want to know any of it. I want to go into it raw and like just hear it from them directly. It was cool. I like not seeing Michael Jordan's face at all. That definitely would have ruined things. I really thought Viola Davis and the few lines she had were really good. And she also ad-libbed the line like a pair of shoes is just shoes until my son steps in them. Like she ad-libbed that, which is crazy. I think they could have done a little bit of something to Matt Damon to make him not just look like Matt Damon playing Matt Damon in the 80s. Like that he just looked like him except slightly fatter. Like that, that was it.
I think it's like the best. I think that's one of the best dad bod suits I've ever seen. Like that was perfectly. That is exactly how my dad is shaped.
But like that's just exactly. That's just how I imagine Matt Damon looks right now. He's like 50 something years old. Like that's just his shape. But I think Ben Affleck
was pretty great in this. I will say, not like
Adam Ward,
but don't. Would you agree with that though? I mean, I'm not saying you dislike the movie. Like when a Damon role hits, like he does, like there's something different.
He was that character was again remarkably unspecial. So I think in that sense, like he was playing the character well. Like he had not really any personality outside of slightly being an asshole, and that was fine. It's like I don't want him to be some like super boisterous, crazy character when it's not who Vaccaro was. Same thing with Affleck with Phil Knight. Although I think he got a little bit more room to run with that sort of like craziness.
Yeah.
But I think it's a difficult movie to grade. I liked a lot of the bad stuff about it. I like when they were designing the shoe. I thought that was super cool. Some of the other moments, like negotiating wise, I thought were awesome. And Chris Tucker also, he was really, really good in this. I think he was the most pleasant surprise from it. I didn't even know I had no clue who's like going into it. I remember when I blogged about it, I knew it, but I had forgotten that he was in this movie until I saw it. And then I was like, he's like one of my favorite parts of this entire thing. So like really solid movie, not something where I'm like, that's the best movie of the year. That's something that should win Oscars. That's something that should win this. I don't think anything about it is award category, but I think it is a very, very solid watch. And the only other complaint maybe is that they did fall victim sometimes to being like doing 90s reference stuff, like 90s episode reference stuff, where it's just, I forget a lot of it, but it was like a lot of like really dumb little things where it's like, yeah, people don't wear basketball shoes out to do their errands. And it's yeah, we get it. Like,
Air Jordan, but, maybe it'll grow on me.
Yeah, maybe it'll grow on me. Yeah, exactly. Like moments like that. I thought the guy who played the agent, whose name I don't remember, I thought he was really good.
Oh, Chris Messina. He's a good character actor. Yeah.
Yeah, he was, I think, was probably my favorite pound for pound moment. But also, maybe that's because he had the most personality out of any character in the movie.
See, I'll eat your nuts.
Yeah, I'll eat your nuts. I think I'm landing at like an 86 on this. I think it was a very good. The best unremarkable movie ever.
Yeah, I'm at an 85, and I think I get where the you're saying that nothing really impressed you. One thing that did really impress me was the comedy here. It, I expected it to be funny. I didn't expect it to be, you know, laugh a minute funny. I mean, it really was a very funny movie. Like the performances, I guess should have seen it coming with Matt Damon, Jason Bateman, Chris Tucker. Like you had a lineup there that could have delivered it. But yeah, no, I found it to be very funny. It is people. This isn't an original thought, but it is very much a dad movie.
Yeah.
I think anybody's dad is going to love this movie, especially with the amount of 80s references and winks and nudges to the
tape deck.
Yeah. Like
I was listening to this on my tape deck.
So many winks and nudges to the audience about the time. And it does feel 80s and the soundtrack's awesome. Had a great time with it. I mean, it's just a good time at the theater. It'll be a major crowd pleaser. Yeah. End of the year awards love. I'm not sure it'll be there. Maybe for Damon. Maybe.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's got a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, I mean, with the field opener 10.
The people in it carry weight.
It's a weak movie, yeah.
It's not going to win, but it'll...
No.
I could see it getting nominated.
Like, you're telling me like a year from now, if that's nominated for Best Picture, you'd be like surprised? I think you'd be very surprised.
No. I also saw people say this is like Moneyball for Snead. It's not Moneyball.
No. No way.
So much tighter written, so much more well-written, better performances.
Moneyball is fucking...
Yeah,
I mean, again, I really like this movie, but Moneyball. There is a level where it's like
League of Its Own
that begins to like. Yeah,
this is very proof positive, though, that the best sports movies are never about the sport. Yep. It's always about the behind the scenes. It's always about something tertiary, the storylines around it. Never about the actual sport. And I wish we got more of it.
You should lean into
a lot of basketball players hit some mean ricochet shots in that early scene when they're like going through all the players on that draft board.
What's his face from
like Turpin or whatever? They're like Turpin. No one's going to hear about this guy again. He's a fucking loser. And like just unnecessarily mean. You're not wrong, but unnecessarily mean.
I think the most egregious wink and nudge to the audience was during that sequence when he's like Charles Barkley. Nobody wants to see Charles Barkley on TV.
Yeah.
The whole audience is like,
you should tweet out saying that. That like give air like a 50 out of 100 and be like, where were the basketball scenes of Jordan? There should have been 2 hours of Michael Jordan playing basketball.
For MJ highlights.
Say to you.
Dude, yeah. Never seen him play. I kind of wanted to see like what the hype was about.
thankfully the movie does enough job of ball washing the guy. Jesus. I mean,
yes. Very big propaganda piece.
Oh my God. I like this movie for the record. I do. I think this is a very competently made movie. Good performances all around. Like there is something, this is going to sound weird, but like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, like they are like modern day, like film stars. Like they've just always been there. Like I don't know movies without those guys, like being a part of the industry. So it's cool to see them collaborating again. But Ben Affleck gets great performances from his actors. And often it's actors you don't expect. Like when was the last like big thing Chris Tucker was in? Was it Silver Linings? I mean, I can make a joke about a certain plain list, but I'll let that slide for a second. But no, everyone's good in it. Ben Affleck, I think, does a great job with all the movies he directs of capturing the time period and the environment that they take place in. Like when you watch The Town, it's so clearly, you know, he does such a good job of like, understanding that city and it really gives it a lot of personality and a lot of life, good performances all around. I like that Ben Affleck seems to be having a lot of fun with the roles he's been playing recently. Like it seemed like he really enjoyed playing Phil Knight. My one issue with this is it's simplistic. I'm not going to say simplistic to a fault, but man, if you bring nachos to this movie, make sure to use plenty of cheese because there's a lot of fucking cornball moments. Like the him discovering like his reasoning behind Michael Jordan being the guy they choose. It's like, I saw one play and in this play, I wrote his entire future. I'm like, okay, movie magic here. Also, while I understand the creative decision, the whole we're going to avoid showing Michael Jordan thing didn't totally work for me. I get why they did it because the whole thing is the movie isn't necessarily about him. It's more about this overarching story. Nobody really knew who Michael Jordan was at this point. He became this phenomenon. But in the scene in which the family meets them together, it became distracting for me because it's like, oh, it's like it's giving you these little glimpses. I don't think that was necessarily necessary. I understand why they did it. It wasn't a huge complaint on my part. But no, it's a solid movie. It's an 80 out of 100. I understand why it has such a high Rotten Tomatoes rating, because there's nothing unlikable about it. Like, it's a very, very watchable movie. I'm sure it's going to be on TV a ton over the next several years. Is it my favorite Affleck movie? No, it's not even, I mean, not even in the top three. The Town is my favorite that he's done. But it's good to see him back in the forefront, because I think Ben Affleck is bizarrely, like, very underappreciated as like a contributor to Hollywood. He's been a part of some of the best films ever. This is not one of those, but it's a competently made film that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these types of movies, and again, that's kind of the thing with Affleck. And like, it's weird to say, because like, The Town is not the same case. The Town is different, but even then, like, there is like this. You're never gonna get like a crazy risk movie from Affleck. I feel like it's always gonna kind of be this style, this vibe, this energy, which is not a complaint to me. Like, it's just a really good, solid, like, and we're not saying it's a bad thing either, but I kind of like that. It's like, except for Live by Night, like, you kind of just know what you're going to get, and it's going to be really solid. Like, I wouldn't expect him to come out here and make anything that's like, you're like, oh, fuck, what was he on? This is crazy. Like, what was going through his mind here? Like, you're never going to get that, which is fine, though. But you are right, too, I think, Chris. You said, like, he always gets a lot out of everyone acting in his movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's a very consistent thing. Like, everyone in his movies, like, you think about some of the big supporting roles, like, who's in it. Everyone's really good, from Alan Arkin in Argo to Jeremy Renner in The Town. Like, you're so always going to get – yeah, you're always going to get someone or something that does a really – like, elevates what's a pretty basic, like, simple role. It's not like any of the lines from Alan Arkin in Argo are, like, over the top. Like, obviously, Argo, fuck yourself is funny, but, like – That just delivered in a great way. So yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's good. I liked it. I think, again, it's a crowd pleaser for sure. It's
for sure.
If you go in and you like leave like despising this, I'd be like, why?
Yeah.
What did this do to offend?
Nothing to hate.
Yeah.
I'm an Adidas really guy.
I think that's totally it on that one though. I think you can go much even deeper. Two pretty simple, like, they know what they were doing, they executed it well type movies.
Yeah, exactly.
I worry
the floodgates have opened on brand movies. I think we're about to get a million of them. Like, I think the floodgates are starting to open on this shit.
Yeah,
like, where people they've run out of like IP, like, literature to really dive into, and
Dyson,
so many true stories you can do. Now they're like doing like company brands, like.
Well, man, I never liked that fucking McDonald's movie, The Founder.
The Founder, yeah.
That was the movie with the most. That was the movie with the most baseline, below average acting performances I've ever. It's like just so vanilla, like no meat to those whatsoever.
Ray Kroc.
Well, I could be making this up, but wasn't it announced that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were going to do a movie about the McDonald's monopoly scandal? Did I make that up?
There's the HBO series on it.
Were they a part of that? That
sounds right, but now you yeah.
Which is an insane story, by the way. Like,
2 years ago, though.
Okay, yeah, it'll go the way of Taika Waititi's Star Wars.
Yeah, it was a really cool story that was like five episodes too long. In terms of like,
it wasn't really that. Okay.
It was long. It's very cool, though. It's a very cool concept. And I think like them dramatizing that up would be pretty neat. It's pretty funny. It's ridiculous.
Do Blockbuster fucking up with Netflix. I think that seems like the most obvious next movie to be made.
You want to talk about a lifeless fucking show, that fucking Blockbuster show. Jesus Christ.
I was wondering who was going to put
shit.
That was rough.
I'm
watching Fresh Off the Boat. Randall Park is very funny in that. That's a very solid sitcom.
I watched the first two episodes because you had that on your watch list, and it is very nice. It's very enjoyable. It's
very funny. Yeah.
And who's Constance Wu? Was that his wife?
Constance Wu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And a couple other like people show up, like guest stars, like Shaq's in it a bit. But yeah, good show. Really good show.
Also, last little pitch. Me and Ken Jack both, I haven't finished the show, but Beef on Netflix.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
Very good. Very, very good.
Succession should clean up in terms of acting awards, but Steven Yeun and Ali Wong are going to give anyone a run for their money. They're very, very fucking good in that show.
Mm-hmm. Really good supporting performances in that,
yes.
Too.
All the acting in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you might be like hesitant, kind of like I was, like going into it just because you hear Netflix and you're just like, ugh. But like the A24 is what shines here, not the Netflix part. And like you really feel that sense of it. Super, super good story. Really awesome. Like the way that they structure it is fucking awesome. Like,
yes,
it's hard to explain without spoiling a lot of it, but like really, really cool show. Highly, highly, highly recommend it.
Big time rec.
What do we do next week?
Let's see.
Do we have to go into the Nick Cage verse here?
I think Renfield and Cherry back to back.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think Renfield, pretty good positive reviews for Renfield off the top.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
I did not realize that Robert Kirkman is one of the lead writers on that, one of the co-writers, which is weird for him to branch out from Walking Dead and Invincible over to Renfield.
You guys don't want to do the Pope's exorcism instead?
I am kind of interested in that, to be honest. I like call it like a fake curiosity, but like I am interested in it. I want to watch it. That's Julie Savory. That's why, right? Julie Savory made it. I like Julie Savory.
Ken Jack does often quite like horror,
religious horror. Stuff. Yeah, you're freaking out way more.
You pulled the wagon for The Nun pretty hard, I recall, right?
Yeah, I think I gave it like a 60, and I like outpaced you in Trope by like 40 points or something like that. Like, I was like, damn, like it was a bad movie, but it was scary. And you guys were like, no, that was just bad.
we you were like, I'm kind of scared by this. We were like, okay, sucks that. So.
Damien Bashir, I think, and then I forget who else. But I don't know. I like Julie Savory a lot. What do you call it? Overlord, I thought was a very underappreciated
movie. Oh, Overlord ruled.
Another movie that was originally supposed to be part of the Cloverfield universe.
Yeah, that's right. God damn it. Stop it. Cloverfield's dead. Let's just say Denver.
No, just reset it and make a direct sequel. Just
yeah, or that.
Yeah, which they announced a few years ago. And I don't know. It'll fit a plan.
That's where JJ should be focusing his energy.
Yeah.
I think that's it, though. Yeah. Two fun movies to go check out for two totally different reasons.
We're off to a good start this year.
It has not been a bad year. True. It has not been a bad year.
It's been nice, The people are releasing nicer movies earlier in the year now, which is
good thing. Do you think that we're officially past the COVID era? Like, I feel like that is a contributing factor here.
I think this will be the final year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Quantumania, I think, suffered, but you can notice that was, and Shazam, especially, you noticed.
There are definitely things that you can tell are impacted by, but I do think we're like kind of.
Yeah, moving past it.
Now we're just Aquaman. Now we're just heading straight towards a fucking writer strike, which will be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's it. For Ken, Jack, Gooch, Chris, I'm Jeff Tilo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good. Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code BARSTOOL for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.
We get the box office, folks.
It's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.